Good morning and welcome. My name is Raina Wells, and on behalf of the Ontario Media Development Corporation, I'm very pleased to welcome you this morning to the fourth and final Digital Dialogue Breakfast of 2014. I'm very pleased to have with us Alfred Spencer from the Accessibility Directorate of Ontario and Richard Cavanaugh from the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund. Our two speakers represent two different ways of encouraging and ensuring increased inclusion and accessibility for persons with disabilities, the first through legislation and education, and the other through funding. Our first speaker is Alf Spencer. Alf Spencer is director of the Outreach and Strategic Initiatives Branch at the Accessibility Directorate of Ontario. As director, Alf is responsible for educating Ontarians about the advantages of inclusion and developing a network of strategic partnerships to help Ontario organizations become accessible by 2025. He's overseen the implementation of over 50 community projects related to creating awareness of accessibility issues, including programs for early childhood educators, elementary school teachers, and post-secondary students and professionals. His approach to community development has touched all aspects of social inclusion, from places of faith to workplaces and sporting events. Alfred.
Thank you, and good morning. 25 minutes is not long enough for me, so you're going to hear me speak very fast. I'm used to lecturing at about an hour and a half, so you're getting the pricey version this morning. Okay, so Ontario is a province of first. It is the first place in the world that has asked businesses to report on the progress of their accessibility. It's the first place in the world that has asked that staff be trained on accessibility as we move a culture and a society. And it's also the first place in the world that declared a goal and time frame for accessibility. I should tell you, though, that British Columbia has now put up their hand to say they'll be ready by 2023. So probably by next year, I'll come back here and say we have a goal of 2022. So stay tuned. So why are we interested in accessibility, and why should you as an audience be interested in accessibility? About 1.65 million people in Ontario have a disability, and seniors age 65 could more than double to 4.1 million by 2036. So and by 2017, which is just around the corner, there will actually be more seniors in the province of Ontario than there will be kids under 14. So you can see in the work you do and the reach out that you're going to do that you're moving into a new population and a new way of doing business. So it means that about 15% of people in Ontario have a disability. So who's covered by this legislation? And this is appealing to you as business owners. If you have one or more employees, you're covered by this legislation. If you provide goods, services, or facilities, you're to the public, or actually from business to business, you're governed by this legislation. And it touches everyone: government, broader public sector, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations. So, Richard, it even impacts on you. There are five areas of standards. The first is customer service, which I spoke about briefly, and really is about changing attitudes and influencing behaviors. It is as simple as a business or your organization asking someone with a disability, "How can I help you?" The employment standard is about making accessibility a regular part of recruiting, hiring, and supporting employees with disabilities. By 2017, you as an employer will be expected and have to arrange accessibility in your interviews, accommodation. You will have to post jobs within the media and on your websites and in an accessible way that people can access them. And right through the whole career of the individual, you will have to accommodate I think the other, in this area, though, I think it's really important to understand that nearly all of us at some point during our work career will need some level of accommodation. Those of us who go skiing in the winter and come back with a broken leg, that's a disability for a period of time, and you as an employer will need to meet the accommodations of that person. If you go back to my first slide and look at the fact that people over 65 are and the mass that they will be, I think recently I heard on the CBC that over 200,000 people in Canada over the age of 65 are still in the workplace, either full-time or part-time. So you can see that how accommodation is going to impact every workplace. And if you are like myself from government, unions will drive the need for accommodation as the population ages. In the information and communication standard, is it about helping people with disabilities access information and communications that they rely on every day? This is about accessible formats, what your websites should look like, et cetera, et cetera. Transportation is about making it easier for everyone to travel in Ontario. And the design of public spaces is about making public spaces more accessible. That's about your curb cuts, your parks, the number of parking spots in malls, et cetera, et cetera. What promenades should look like in even in this building, how you enter the building and how you get to the food court, et cetera, et cetera. The customer service standard, which is the first standard, it means that you as a business or an organization must have policies and plans in place that recognize the accessibility as a day of life. It means that you must train your staff, that you must communicate to people with disabilities about things like admission fees, temporary disruptions, and you must have a feedback mechanism so that persons with disabilities can actually tell you how you're doing or raise their concerns. If you have over 20 employees, you must document what you have done, and you also must report to the government on your success. The next template gives you a sense, and this is the look and feel, and and I know you're in the media world, this is the brand of the accessibility of Ontario. When you see these kind of products, this is us providing you free tools and resources. Accessibility for many of you, if this is the first time you've sort of heard this legislation, it feels overwhelming and you sort of go, oh my God, I'm going to have to do everything and what's this going to cost me, et cetera, et cetera. On our website, which I'll get into at the end of my presentation, we have outlined over the goal of 2025, year over year, what is expected of you as a business and an organization so that you can prepare in advance or understand in advance what is coming year after year. In the integrated standard, the highlights are, again, you must have policies. But if you're a private business over 50 employees, you actually must have a documented multi-year accessibility plan. Government has had to do this for a number of years, as has the broader public sector. But as of 2015, businesses over 50 must start preparing plans. Again, they have to train their staff, they have to look at their procurement and to consider accessibility as they buy goods and services themselves. And if they have kiosk or portable technology for, you know, like as you pay your bills in restaurants, et cetera, you have to look at accessibility. We have a number of resources to help you, and the first one, accessforward.ca, is a partnership with us. I would say to you, if you're interested in accessibility or if it's part of the work that you do in your organization, this is probably the most valuable of our work websites. On your screen, it's pretty hard to see, but it has been designed so that you can, and this is, and you in the media would understand this, it has been designed so that you can hear it, you can see it, you can download it, it's in modules it's in modules for teaching from the 20 minutes we have today to the hour and a half that I'm used to presenting. The next one, working together, many of you will probably be asking, well, how does this work with the Ontario Human Rights Code? The next project, the one on the right, was designed by the Human Rights Commission and ourselves to clarify for everyone the differences in the legislation, and I would suggest that you have a look at that. In the integrated accessibility reg, which is information and communication, you must provide emergency and public safety information to persons with disabilities. You must have accessible formats or communication supports. Again, you must provide feedback, and you must make your websites accessible. Your educational and training institutions have requirements that are even more stringent, and I think Richard and I talked a little earlier about the work he's doing in universities and what they will be looking for through Richard's work, and there are real requirements about school text, et cetera, and how to make them accessible. So if you are doing a website by January the 1st, 2014, which has passed, if you have a new internet website, you must conform to WCAG 2.0 Level A, which is a world standard. All content that is published after January the 1st, 2012 must be accessible, excluding live captioning and audio description, which are not within the regulation. For the accessible environments, I wanted to show you a product by Gates Alliance, which is another resource. And on the feedback processes and stuff, those kind of things that you're worried about, there are more resources here. On the employment standard, to go back to it, you must develop individual workplace emergency responses information for persons with disabilities. I want to offer a suggestion here or a caution. Often in workplaces, I will tell you that nearly all Ontarians believe in accessibility, and Ontarians by a culture and Canadians by a culture want to do the right thing. What happens in the workplace, though, however, is I suggest to Richard, if he's in a wheelchair, Richard, don't worry if there's a fire alarm or whatever, I'll help you to get out. But what happens in the workplace is 2 weeks later, I get transferred to another floor, Richard gets transferred to another floor, the next month there's a fire, Richard's looking for me and I'm looking for him. So it's really important that we keep those kind of informations current, real, and alive. There must be individual accommodation plans for persons with disabilities agreed to by both their employer and the employee, and there must be an accommodation plan in place when a person returns to work. This is back to the skier who comes home from his holidays. And there must be an employee's accessibility needs must be addressed right through the career of the individual. A few years ago, I ran employment programs, and what we found is, back to the right, people wanted to do the right thing. Oftentimes, people would want to hire someone with a disability, and they would hire them to be basically the receptionist, so they could get into the building. But when the staff party or the staff meeting was on the second floor, they weren't able to do it. So you have to think about accessibility from the day the person walks into the organization till the day the person leaves. Again, there are resources that are free for you. I would say to you, if you're in the employment hiring or interested in accommodations for persons with disabilities, the Conference Board of Canada has produced with us a great tool, which I would say is basically the best guide and has been recognized as the best guide in Canada for employing persons with disabilities. And the Human Resource Professional Association did a number of videos for us, and it was a big risk for us as government. We actually, they're comical, they're funny, and was a different way for government to go about things. But as you in the media world would understand, that we were trying to get a message that would resonate with people. And we all know that in the principles of adult education, one of them is to deliver the message in humor. The next slide that I want to draw your attention to is one I want you to think about. And that is that this slide depicts a number of things that where we have touched accessibility. The message here for you, though, is that accessibility touches every aspect of our lives. And when you have a disability, it magnifies tenfold or a hundredfold as you try to go through, you know, getting into a hospital or a college or university, or dealing with trying to get into a sports or arena, et cetera, et cetera. We've talked a little bit about the reporting, and I'm in the spirit of time, I'm going to move away from it. The AODA Wizard, which is on our website, Access On. If you're interested in anything on accessibility or learning the path for the next 10 years that your organization may take, it is on the Wizard. It's a really easy tool. As you go through it, it will take you, if you're the lawyer for your organization, it will take you right into e-laws. If you're the guy who wants to do a quick 15-minute update at your staff meeting, it will give you that level of information. We are on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and our brand is Access On. We have two, if you have questions, please feel free to call our offices. We have two levels of help desk, one for general questions and one for more in-depth questions, and our staff will be glad to help you. So in summation, and I think I probably have a couple of minutes, I want you to think about accessibility as, when you go back to your offices, I want you to look around your offices and say, if someone was working in my office today and was in a wheelchair, how would that person come to our next staff function? I want you to think about, if someone was blind, how would that person manage to get to the washroom? I want you to think about, if someone was deaf in our organization, how would they know to exit the building in a fire? I would also want you to think about, if someone had a hidden disability, how would I open the question, or how should the question be handled to discuss or make an environment free enough where people who have disabilities are able to talk about it and feel welcome in your workplaces? Thank you very much. Questions, comments? I think we've probably got a few more minutes.
We do. We have about 5 or 6 minutes for questions. It's hard to see, but at the back, I think that's Sasha.
Thanks. Sasha Borsma from Sticky Brain Studios. A lot of the regulations are, of course, on websites. More and more of Ontario's media consumption is, of course, on tablet devices, whether through mobile web or through apps. At the time, does the AODA have any regulations or guidance about that, or is that one of those way too new, one step at a time, but expect it coming in a few years?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Thanks for asking the question, because it is coming in a few years. We're not there, and I think one of the things in accessibility, as we've gone through the information and communication standard, information and communications is way ahead of government. And by the time we get to the requirements in 2017, we use the WCAG requirement. You know what? By the time we get to 2021, there'll be WCAG 3 or WCAG 2 quadruple A. There will be something new. So I think the app question is a really good one. Stay tuned. Richard and I talked earlier about a couple of projects we do with the Design Exchange and the Council of Universities, and you can see that the young people in universities and colleges are already taking us there in those competitions by saying, this is where you need to go. It's not about a website anymore. It's about having a handheld device and having something that can actually do an accommodation right there on the spot. But thanks for the question. Anyone else? This is interesting, having the light, because I can hear the voices, but I can't see the faces.
My name's David Perlman. My company's Whole Note Media, Inc. We publish a music magazine that focuses extensively on live concert listings. Mm-hmm. It's a question really impacting on the presenters who list in our magazine cover a huge range of venues, from churches to, I mean, probably every kind of semi-public space you might have, with varying degrees of accessibility in there. How does this impact on them in terms of if you're putting on a concert in 2017?
Well, it impacts on the fact that you have to make your facilities, and facilities isn't really about washrooms, nor is it about buildings. It is exactly the what you talked about. So we've developed, again, some products, but I'll give you an example of one that we've done that won't answer your question, but will give you the thought process. In preparation for the Pan Am Para Pan Games, we developed a product called Accessibility for Festivals and Events. And what you're describing really is a festival and event. And we tested it at World Pride. Because we're getting ready for there'll be nearly 50 festivals next summer here in Greater Toronto. And what we've done is given guidelines to organizations on how you would make, if it's a Shakespeare in the Park, how do you make that accessible? How do you make sure that people can get in and out? So, will it be the law and will they have to report? No, but what they should be doing is looking at guidelines on how to do that. The other thing, and I should have put it up on the website, and this is for all of you, we did a project with the Ontario Municipal Social Services Association called How Do You Engage with People with Disabilities? How do you have a dialogue and respect the fact that someone can't speak to you, that can't verbalize, has a communications disability? And I think if you take the guidelines for the festivals and the guidelines on how you have the discussion, at some point you get this accessible concert. It happens. Will it ever be perfect? I have to tell you, you will never, any of us, ever have the perfect event, because we're all individuals. We're persons. We're not people. So you'll never accommodate everyone 100%. But the fact that you are trying to build an event that is accessible says to everyone in the room, this is what we should be doing as a society. Does that help to answer your question? Thank you. Yes. You, I can see.
Because I can't see you really well, but it's fine. My question is more about budgets.
Yes.
Because just like we said, if we try to have an event and make it accessible for every single kind of disability, it sounds to me like the budget is going to explode uncontrollably. So how would you deal with that in advance to make sure that most of the people are going to be accommodated for, but that your budget is not going crazy?
Okay, so I think the best place to start is to ask people up front. So if you're having an event, you ask people what their will they have an accommodation need. I've been to lots of events, I can tell you, where people have done, hired American Sign Language interpreters, and the person is sitting in the front row doing nothing. And that business is paid, a couple of $1,000s for that. So the real way to do it is to ask up front. The second part of your question, though, which I'm going to add to my response, is we have this sense that accommodation, and if you talk to employers, it's their biggest fear. It's like, if I hire this person with a disability, it's going to cost me thousands of dollars. Well, the truth is that about the average cost in the workplace of an accommodation is about $500. That doesn't mean that there aren't some that are into the tens of thousands of dollars, but the average is about $500. And we've done, we've documented it and we've studied it in workplaces. About 75% of accommodations costs nothing. It's just getting back to the dialogue and putting it up front when you're doing an event. What is it you need? And then having that, you'll find that if you offer it, the person probably will settle somewhere in the middle that makes them enjoy the experience or be part of your experience. I think it's over to you, Richard.
Okay, thank you very much. Oh, we have one more question. We have time for one or two more questions.
I'm Anne-Marie Sluga with the Directors Guild of Ontario. Our building doesn't have access. We're on Peter Street, and it's one of the older buildings. And I didn't, when we were recruiting for someone, a person called on over the phone. I called her back and said we'd like to meet with her. Clearly, you didn't know by paper that the person was in a wheelchair. And, of course, indicated to me, called me the week later to say that she'd driven by the place to determine her father had driven her there to see how she could get in the building, and there was no way. Now, I've been told that some buildings are grandfathered in terms of when they were built to do that. But given this, I guess my question is, I mean, we're on the sixth floor of a 15-floor building. So we can certainly perhaps do if there were some physical changes need to be done on our premises. But the question is, basically, you can't even get in the front door because there's steps.
Yep.
Once you come in, and then there's steps. And the only way that this lady could come in was going into the delivery dock area.
Yep.
Where they had the lift there.
Yep.
So how will those kind of circumstances be dealt with, or how we as an employer would be able to accommodate when it's not our building?
The question that you raise is so complicated, but I'm going to try and take it piece by piece. Okay, the first issue that you raised that they didn't know you raised is that you're not the landlord of the building, correct? So we have this debate going on all over Ontario where businesses like yourself, because you're obviously interested in doing the right thing, want to do it, and the landlord who owns the building says, you know what, I'm only interested in collecting my rent. So there's that problem. I can tell you that, you know, and this isn't the easy answer. I mean, the hope is that, you know what, eventually landlords will understand that they're starting to see vacancies because you'll move somewhere else, you know, like, or maybe not you, but other companies will. So that's number one. Number two, the accommodation in the particular circumstance. If you were willing to interview that person on the ground floor, or if you said, you know what, we'll interview you in another building, you've met the requirement. You don't have to have the person for the first time on the ninth floor. Your quandary, though, becomes, wow, this is the person we want. So how do we get to the ninth floor? So, you don't want to start an accommodation of having somebody work off-site who never, you know, the rest of the staff don't know them, and especially in the kind of work you do. So I would say to you that and it's not an easy answer, but I'm going to give you the approach. Interview the person, make the arrangements of the interview, then you have the right as the employer to talk about how may I accommodate you, or how would we accommodate you. Then you enter into that dialogue, then you determine your steps going forward. But I think the real challenge is this landlord challenge, and we're not there on the legislation. And you know, one of the good things about the AODA is the legislation has to be reviewed. The standards have to be reviewed every 5 years, and the legislation as we progress has to be reviewed every 3 years. So more and more questions like that are coming up because, you know, when you write something, you don't write it to perfect state. But I think you're going to see eventually there will be requirements on landlords to actually do that. But I can tell you that I did a tour of the city of Ottawa, and I actually saw a strip mall where some of the entrances were accessible and some weren't. And the person who took me on the tour said it was the businesses themselves that decided to incur the cost, but the landlord wouldn't do it. I know that's not a great answer, but it gives all of you the sense of how complicated things can become. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Some excellent questions and some really interesting information. Our next speaker is Richard Cavanaugh. Richard was brought on as CEO funding officer of the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund this past May. And before BAF, a new abbreviation for the industry, which, because we don't have enough of those, he spent more than a decade as a partner with Connectus Consulting, Inc., specializing in communications and social policy research. Richard has previously worked in both the telecommunications and broadcasting industries and in academic research with Queen's and Carleton universities. Take it away, Richard.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I will start off by saying this is my very first public speaking engagement as the CEO funding officer of the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund. I don't know if that's a privilege or a challenge or what have you, so I'm testing the waters a little bit with you guys this morning, giving you a little bit of background and hopefully a little bit of information and hopefully a little bit of excitement about something new that is about to come to fruition within the next few short weeks. I'll talk to you about how the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund got underway, who we are and what we're doing right now, what our mandate is, the kinds of things that we're focusing on. Just fill you in a little bit on the background, since this is a very new thing for lots of people, and our presence out there in the bigger world is not that great just yet. I want to talk to you about the granting process. We are a granting organization, as in a funding organization, what kind of projects we'll be looking at to provide grants to, and the kinds of streams of thinking that we're interested in seeing applied to the fund. I'll talk to you a little bit about what's going on right now as we speak, when we hope to write the first checks, optimistically, but I think we're looking pretty good there. And then just a little bit more of a higher level, a few words from me about the opportunity that the fund represents. So the fund originated from BCE's purchase of CTV Globe Media a few years back. There was a very big push by the Canadian disability community to bring accessibility into the fold of the direct benefits or tangible benefits that are realized through profitable transactions in the broadcasting industry. The commission subsequently approved the establishment of the fund. BCE worked with the disability groups on developing a terms of reference and an interim board, and the initial capitalization of the fund is $5.7 million, which I really enjoy going to conferences now and just having side conversations with people and saying, I have $6 million to spend. You know, I like the reaction that I get to that in an industry where funding can be very hard to come by. I've given you the links here to the actual decisions from the commission if you're interested in reading through those at any point in time. And I want to make one thing kind of clear from the outset, because there, even in the early days, there's some confusion about what the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund is. It's actually got an Inc. after its name. It's an incorporated not-for-profit. It is an independent and impartial fund, so it's not run by Bell. And it's not run by the CRTC. It is totally independent and stands alone out there. And as you'll find out, I think quite unique in the world of funding. In terms of who we are, I'm going to point this out because there's sort of an important little backstory here. It's a fairly small board of directors, just 9 members, 6 of whom are called accessibility directors, and the remaining 3 are broadcasting directors. Now, 4 of the accessibility directors were appointed to the board in specific areas of disability. So hearing, sight, cognitive, and mobility. There are 2 additional independent accessibility directors. There are 2 broadcasters and 1 broadcasting distribution undertaking. Now, the way in which the fund was structured, for everything that the fund does, it needs to be slanted toward accessibility, not toward broadcasting. So whether it's a board meeting or a committee meeting, there always must be one more accessibility director present than broadcasting director present. That represents quorum, and that's important because it lends the discussion towards the focus on accessibility as opposed to the focus on broadcasting. As far as staff is concerned, you are looking at him. I'm it so far. That will change likely going forward once we get some projects out into the field. Project managers and others may come on board. And just so you're aware, I didn't put it in the slide, but a number of the board members are here in Toronto. I'm actually located in Ottawa, and where the fund kind of headquarters, as you were, is being moved kind of gradually over a period of a few months to my office in Ottawa. So that's where we're operating out of. This is very wordy, and it's going to show up on our website in this way as well. But I want to take you through it because it describes a little bit about who we are and what we do and what our focus is. Again, the words independent and impartial are up there. And by the way, the commission, the CRTC, came up with some of this language. Disability organizations with some, broadcasters with some. It was kind of a meeting of the minds. So independent and impartial, supporting innovative projects, platform-neutral solutions that promote accessibility to broadcasting content. Alf had a great comment in his presentation. He said, accessibility touches every single aspect of our lives. That is absolutely no different than consuming broadcast content, whether it's by phone, online, on a conventional television set. There are some really amazing accessibility innovations going on out there right now, and this fund is meant to both advance and tap in to those innovations. The second point here, projects incremental to existing regulatory obligations. That's very common language in funds that have been approved by the CRTC. What it means is that you can't use the fund to meet your regulatory obligations if you are a broadcaster. And you can't introduce new regulatory obligations as a result of anything that we provide a grant for. So, for example, while broadcasters right now need to close caption 100% of their programming, there's not a lot of room for increment there, there's nothing that the fund would be able to do to either change that or introduce something new there, but rather make it better, add to it, make it incremental. This part C funds projects which provide practical solutions that tangibly increase accessibility is probably, these may be the most important words in our mandate. And in my conversations with various groups, organizations, and with the commission, they are the words we keep coming back to over and over again. The tangibility of something that's going to make a difference is going to be extremely important. That's how we will largely adjudicate applications to the fund. Are they going to make a difference, and if so, how, in accessibility of broadcasting content across a range of disabilities, not just sensory disabilities, mobility disabilities, cognitive disabilities, and so on. And those are all broken down into many different subsections as well. When possible, we would encourage applicants to the fund to bring inclusive design principles to whatever it is they're bringing to us. So if you've got a new piece of hardware, a piece of software, it needs to be inclusive from the get-go, rather than looking at something that, well, we'll put it out there and then we'll retrofit it right down the road. It's kind of like building a street without curb cuts in it and having to go back and put the curb cuts in because they need to be there. Let's get the curb cuts in there in the first place. That's what inclusive design refers to. We'll also be providing service in English and French, and as fully accessible as possible. So what are we going to fund? My quick answer is that I don't actually know. I really don't know. We're going to have to see what we get from the creative and innovative minds that are out there. But we have created some streams, and we're going to expand on these on our website to provide a little bit of guidance for people so far as putting their applications together are concerned. So we would certainly be looking at technical R&D applications, new applications, interfaces that enable consumers, say, with a vision disability to better understand where they are in navigating an on-screen television menu that they can't see, nor can they hear because there's no audio interface there. I will mention, just as an aside, you're likely aware that the CRTC is currently holding its hearings called Let's Talk TV. And in the submissions phase of that proceeding, something in the neighborhood of 10 to 15% of submissions to the commission on the television hearing dealt with accessibility or focused accessibility. And the staff were simply astounded. It's never been that high. And the whole notion of interface capability and functional interfaces between a remote or a phone and what you're able to access on your screen by far made up the bulk of those submissions. They are a major concern out there. We'd be looking at business innovation ideas, new business cases, seed funding, new revenue opportunities, perhaps education, maybe a post-secondary course on broadcasting accessibility, maybe an education stream that would promote the notion of broadcasting accessibility from other vantage points as well. And then combinations of these things, the category of other. You know, bring us your ideas, and let's say if they fit the mandate and the objectives of the fund. We are certainly encouraging partnerships among stakeholders out there. I anticipate that when we announce our first round of funding and we finally receive applications to the fund, we will likely see groups of companies, organizations, consulting firms, post-secondary research institutions, what have you, coming together in order to bring their ideas as a group to the fund. In terms of eligibility, we're looking, there is likely to be something of an international component down the road. We do want the team leads to be Canadian citizens or permanent residents, and to have the bulk of the research, if it's a research initiative, or whatever that initiative is, take place here in Canada for the Canadian populace. We're looking also at short and long-term initiatives. So if someone comes to us with an application to the fund that says, here's, you know, part one is for the end of 2015, part two, 2017, part three, 2020, certainly we would look at those kinds of initiatives as well. Although there may be some short-term, you know, beginning, middle, end over a six-month period of time as well. So what's happening right now? Well, as I was looking at my slides this morning, I realized I had not put our website address down anywhere. And I probably didn't want to because it was thrown up there pretty fast last year when things were just getting underway, the bylaws were being written, an interim board was being named. And when I had that website tested independently by some consumers with disabilities, it did not exactly pass the test. So it's there. It's www.baf-far.ca. It's still up, but it will be taken down very shortly and replaced by a brand new website that will be fully accessible. It's being developed in a content management system called Drupal 7. It is, I hope it will be, WCAG 2.0 level A at least, maybe level AA, in terms of its accessible functions and its accessibility, broadly speaking. So it's very exciting and should launch, I'm hopeful, at the right at the beginning of October. We're also building stakeholder awareness, which is one reason I'm here today, promoting the existence of the fund. It's been an interesting experience in terms of timing, you know, identifying that the fund is getting out there, but not wanting people to sit around waiting and waiting and waiting for it to start. But certainly we will be up and running and very much more in the public eye at the beginning of October. In terms of how much money, I get the few questions I've had have kind of dealt with that in the course of talking to various organizations. We haven't yet determined exactly how much we'll release for the first round of applications, and I have a figure in mind. It will be significant enough to fund, I hope, a good solid range of project initiatives. We will also have a cap established on a per initiative basis. Again, we haven't quite decided exactly how much that will be, but it will again be sufficient to both attract applications and ensure that enough funding resource is there in order for individual applicants to achieve their goals. I'm also working on increasing the capitalization of the fund. And while $6 million or so is an excellent starting point, it is a permanent fund, and it will need additional capital going forward. Certainly, additional transactions in the industry could funnel some benefits monies, as was the case in the original fund increment. Hard to say how many of those would be left of any kind of significant number or amount. So we're going to look at some other options as well for bringing more dollars to the fund to ensure that it's cyclical. And after we announce the first round of applications, I hope that on the heels of receiving those initiatives and approving those projects, we will announce a second round of applications, probably middle of next year. So the timeline is more or less as follows. We've elected to take an approach that will issue a call for letters of intent. And what that means is, in some cases, putting together a project proposal for the fund might be a fair amount of work. And we'd like to ensure that anybody who's got an idea that they want to bring to us is in lockstep with our mandate and our focus and the objectives that we have in mind. So a letter of intent will be a kind of three or four pager. It'll be announced on our website and in other venues as well. Again, hopefully the early October timeframe. People who are interested would let us know what their objectives are, if they have a methodology, if it's a research initiative, what they want to bring to the table, what kind of impact it will have, and we would direct you back to the mandate, explain to us how it will tangibly increase accessibility and so on, and who's on board, what's your team, and so forth and so on. We'll develop a full grant application process and a call for applications, so we'll take the letters of intent, we'll look them over, review them, and contact those proponents and request from them a full application to the fund. That's how it's going to work. At least in the first round, that's how it's going to work. We're kind of making it up as we go along, but it's been very successful. We've consulted nationally and internationally. There's nothing quite like the Broadcasting Accessibility Fund, but there's lots of other funds out there, and this has been a very effective way to go about determining, first of all, are they going in the right direction? Secondly, ensuring that organizations that have limited resources potentially, we can tell them early on, like, we don't think maybe you want to go forward with a full-blown proposal, all right? It's not quite what we're looking for. So it saves time, resources, money, and so on. It allows us a snapshot of what it is you're intending to do and then go forward with a full-blown application after that. Once we've reviewed and adjudicated and had board approval, we're likely, I hope, to be writing checks in the early part of 2015, certainly by April. So, I still get the question sort of like, okay, so you're a fund, you're going to write checks, you're going to get proposals, and it's all going to be great, but what exactly is it that you're doing here? Well, I went to a conference in July called the International Summit on Accessibility, sponsored by Carleton University. And there was a lot of whiz-bang technology there as far as accessibility is concerned. One individual who had developed a system so his son, who had cerebral palsy, could play video games by manipulating a sensor with his tongue. And it was that was one small thing in 3 days of just mind-blowing ideas. There is an enormous amount of creative thought going on out there about accessibility. This fund is intended to draw on those ideas, to help get them out there into the real world, and I think leverage them as well going forward. This is a very unique, I mean, you could almost ask me why I applied for the job. That's what these bullets, I think, represent. this is really unique. There's nothing like this in the world, a broadcasting accessibility fund. I want this to be the model for the rest of the world to follow. And we're going to make some waves. I have no doubt at all with the kind of stuff I've seen out there already. We're going to tap into those ideas and keep the fund as innovative as possible. We'll leverage those dollars going forward, so idea begets idea and so forth. And I have here an opportunity to make a major difference in content accessibility. This could make an enormous difference in content accessibility. So I'm delighted to be here. I am honored to be at the table and be able to talk to you about this very exciting new venture. And I'm happy to take any questions you might have. So thanks for your time. Thanks, Rand.
Thank you.
Oh, and this is me. You can reach me because I'm the only one you can reach right now. But those are my coordinates.
There's a question over on the side. Yep.
Thank you very much. It was really interesting. My name is Amit Breuer, and I'm a producer. And I just tell a short story, and that will be actually my question. I shot last month a demo as part of an experimental Canadian Media Fund development process, and it was not part of our content, but one of our cast members is disabled and in mobility issues, and it's a comedy, and he was a stand-up comedian. We really liked him in the auditions, and he's part of the team now, and then we shot 3 days in Toronto area in Mississauga, and I had to hire some people just to be with us on the set to help us, you know, finding solutions to mobility issues, to locations, lots of things. And it was great. We have a very nice result. But when I'm now planning my production budget, if we're going to continue with the same cast, I really have to take into consideration some additional expenses for including this wonderful actor in our cast. In our, you know, scope of budget, it's a comedy, and part of the comedy is, of course, his inaccessibility to get to, you know, it's becoming also the content. So, if you will, it could be something like maybe not educational course, but I would say entertainment that will be hopefully prime time material on broadcast or internet in Canada. So I'm just wondering if this is something that I'm just starting to look for solutions, you know, as a producer to consider. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question. It's a really good one, and I've had it posed in sort of different ways to me previously. While I think there needs to be an appreciation that it's not actually a content production fund, and I certainly understand, you know, your goals and the objectives that you have, and it's a very important element as far as the content production side of things is concerned. It's more about, the fund is more about how I, if I have quadriplegia and have no use of my dexterity is extremely limited, and I use a sip and puff method to control my entertainment, how am I, as that individual, able to watch the comedy that you're producing? That's more what the fund is about. So it's extremely important to have the promotion and presence and portrayal of persons with disabilities on the content side, and I've worked on that side of things previously. But it's more a matter of accessibility in the consumption of entertainment as opposed to the production of entertainment, if you can appreciate the distinction. Thank you.
Sorry, my name is Anthony. Just had a question. In terms of the fund, are you, if somebody has a concept that's a hardware that's not yet developed, are you open to listening to that and just helping them develop the hardware?
Yes. Now, I think that's really good, but, and another great question, actually. So you could have conceptually an idea for a piece of hardware. This already, I'll use an example. This already exists, but let's pretend it doesn't. An application, well, it's a piece of software, actually, but an application to turn your phone into a remote control that controls your TV set. That's a great idea, right? I don't have a clue how to do it. So if you were to draft a letter of intent to the fund, if you present the idea and then some support for how you would be able to bring that idea to reality, okay, some substance, right? How exactly? The language can be as technical as you need it to be, but it needs to be substantive enough that we would see it as an opportunity to provide a grant to continue its development. Okay? So ideas, absolutely, but some substantiation as well. I know I'm out of time. Is this the last question? Are we out?
Unfortunately.
You're
Hi, Richard. I'm Brad Fox with Strata Films Union Pictures. Just a point of clarification, if you could talk just a little bit about how you're defining broadcast in this. Because right. Unlike other benefits packages, obviously you don't have license requirements or you don't have to be working with any of the BDUs as right. an eligibility criteria, but also predominantly coming for CRTC funds. I'm assuming you have some guideline on what subset of the entire media landscape broadcast accessibility is speaking to?
Right. That's an excellent question, actually. And it needs to be very broadly thought of. It does have the word broadcasting in it, meaning broadcasting, but broadcasting that is available for you to consume anywhere. Right. So whether online production, whether on your phone, how can you best access that content? If you were to provide, something like sign language interpretation for an online program or online content that doesn't exist yet, that would be potentially fair game for the fund as well. So the idea of platform neutrality is extremely important here. And the idea is to, whatever that content might be, how does the initiative increase or advance accessibility to that content, whatever it might be, whether it's on my phone or whether it's the remote clicker for a TV or something that you're consuming on your computer.
If I could just follow up for just a second on that, and I don't have a case study in mind, so it's not like I'm dancing around something, but it does, even in the examples you cited, does there need to be a traditional BDU broadcast link in the chain? And I'm trying to come up with something that doesn't. If you had some amazing accessibility innovation that would innovate live captioning of live streaming events to movie theaters.
Right.
So there's something where you're working in two spaces that don't involve a traditional broadcast link.
Right.
Would that be something you consider, or do you need some step in that chain to be through a traditional BDU programming?
I actually think that that's a very interesting idea, one that I hadn't heard of yet. I think that, again, we would be open to any kind of suggestion that improves accessibility to the consumption of content. So I'm not thinking about the sort of the traditional linear broadcast formats when I think about this. Now, in terms of the actual, what is it that you're going to be doing to improve accessibility, and how will it work on multiple platforms? Right, that would be really good, because if you can bring in the linear but also the non-traditional at the same time, so much the better.
Perfect, thank you.
Does that clarify it?
Yeah. No,
okay.
Absolutely.
Good.
I'm sorry to have to cut off this fascinating discussion, but we are out of time. Thank you very much, Alf and Richard, for being here. Thank you all for coming out. If you missed the other OMDC Digital Dialogue breakfasts, you can see them on the OMDC YouTube channel. Before I let you go, I want to say a quick thank you to the OMDC staff who have helped put together this year's breakfast series, and our volunteers as well. Thank you all for coming out, and hope to see you at next year's Digital Dialogue Breakfasts.